Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hello, folks. This is Dave Gahari on the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. And let's see if we're coming through. All right. Yes, it's coming through. Can't believe it. It's actually working. I'm kidding. So, welcome to those who have been here before and to those who haven't. It is St. Patty's Day. See that? March 17, 6:03 p.m. Central Time. And St. Patty's Day, well, when I grew up, St. Patty's Day was a day when you would be literally walking through New York City with a case of green beer on your shoulder and nobody bothered you. So those days, I guess, are gone. I don't know if forever, but we had a whole hell of a lot of fun on St. Patty's Day all those decades when the country was the country, what it was like until it was messed with by you know who. So let's go over some of the housekeeping stuff and then we'll get Dave in. Okay, so this is a call-in show and the show's direction is dictated by the callers, whatever questions or comments they might have. And the good doctor has 2 minutes to answer a question or more or less, depending how busy we are. And around 15 seconds before those 2 minutes, you'll hear this sound. And then on the two minute mark, you'll hear it again. And that means it's time to wrap it up to get to the next caller. As I've said before, it depends on how many people are waiting to get in. Sometimes there's not many people. Sometimes there's way too many people. And we can't even fit them in. So you'll know, based on, you know, the tone of my voice, how many people are in here. So that is the show. And, of course, the ongoing challenge is if anyone can let us know of a more significant existential threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry, let us know and the show is over. We'll quit. Alongside that, if someone can let us know of a more effective deliverer of that message other than Dr. David Duke, who's been doing this for literally going on 60 years of naming the eternal enemy, let us know if there's someone out there who knows more about the eternal enemy or can deliver that message more effectively, and we'll quit right on the spot. Of course, it's not going to happen, but what the hell? We'll say it anyway. Okay, it is 6:05, and we are broadcasting from Crestview Studios in the Florida Panhandle, and it's a 63-degree day here in the Panhandle. Dave, how about by you? Is it nice there?
Oh, it's beautiful today. I just came from the gym.
Nice. In the 60s?
Oh, yeah. It's a young 70s, no question, just like me.
Dave, what's happening? What's on your mind?
Well, I tell you what. I got a thought. So I'm in the gym. I'm working out hard. And I figured out that I want to give. I don't want to even give one that's much prepared. I really want to give one that is just off the cuff, just from my knowledge, but succinct. And just basically a 15-minute story of the history of the world in connection to the Jewish people and the Jewish impact, especially on the last century. But we're going to start 3,000 years ago. So let me give it to you. It's going to take about 15 minutes. When we get close to that time, let me know. If I need another minute or something to finish, I know you'll let me. But I've got a lot to say here. I think you're going to enjoy it. I think everybody's going to enjoy it. And it's going to be a lot to talk about when I finish. Okay?
All right. Go for it, buddy.
Okay, here we go. More than 3,000 years ago, there came about a people. Among many other peoples of the world, there were thousands of different tribes, groups all over the world of people. There were Romans, and there were Greeks, there were Germans, there were Frenchmen, there were Russians, our people of those descents. There are people, different African tribes, people of different tribes of China, Mongolia even, Indian tribes of the Americas. And these tribes all had different ethics, and they had different cultures, and a different expression of what we call elements of mankind. I'm going to give you the Christian view of history right now. And I know that many of you go to Christian churches. It's still the most popular faith of European people, even though it's certainly been a faith that has been established and created in the world by Europeans. In fact, the New Testament makes it very clear. St. Paul very clearly in the New Testament itself makes it really clear that the Jewish establishment rejected Jesus Christ, literally hated Jesus Christ, condemned Jesus Christ in every way possible. The Talmud, in fact, says Jesus Christ was a bastard, horrible word to use about a man who is preaching love to all mankind, his mother as a prostitute. And all this is fact. It's all really clear historically. The thing is that it's just, here's the Christian view is that God created and made his favored people or tried to protect his people to spread his word, the Jews. But they had such hubris, they had such chutzpah that wasn't good enough for them. They didn't want to be merely the people of God. They decided to be gods themselves. They decided they knew better than God. They decided they were more than gods. And they created what is called Judaism. And over the centuries, Judaism developed what's called an oral law. The oral law became the Talmud. The Talmud is their chief book. That's the halakha. That's their laws of life. And it is the most racist book you ever read. The Torah is pretty racist in its own self in terms of preserving their faith, their heritage, their genealogy. But God realized that, and he had a lot of problem with Jews. I mean, he was, when he called Moses up to Mount Sinai, he said, look, I'm going to have to kill all you people. Look what you do. I save you out of the land of Egypt. And what do? You worship other gods. You commit every kind of sodomy, immorality, murder, rape, assault, evil that you can imagine. I'm going to start over, Moses. I'm going to start over. This is all there in the Old Testament. Just read it. The way the Talmud interprets it is that Moses argued with God, and Moses said to God that if you go against me and my people, I go against you. And again, it seemed like God was having an incredible problem with the Jewish people, that in spite of the special privilege he gave them to receive this message, they rejected the word of God so many times. And then finally, they worked to actually crucify the Son of God, Jesus Christ. And if you read Jesus Christ's life in the New Testament, if you read it honestly, if you really read it verse by verse by verse, it talks about a new covenant. It's basically God saying to the world, these Jews did not follow my word. Just as it said in Deuteronomy, if you keep my word and you keep, you know, your allegiance to me and the values that we preach and the word that I give you, I will celebrate you to the end generation. But if you break my word, I will requite you instantly. And Jews broke that word, and they got, in fact, banished. And then Christ came along, right? Christ came along, and he said, no, I'm not going to be a Messiah that's going to conquer the world for you and then let you rule over other people and murder other people and enslave other people as you've been doing. I'm going to make it clear. I'm teaching you the Word of God, and I'm going to make it clear, folks, that God, my Father in heaven, wants us to love one another, not enslave one another, not hate one another, not kill one another en masse. No, I'm preaching a salvation, a personal salvation for everyone. And the New Testament really makes clear that. And by any measure, if you read the New Testament, you'll understand why Jews, you know, envision it as the most anti-Semitic book in the world, even more anti-Semitic than the Protocols of Zion. Just read it in Jerusalem Post, by, you know, the same rabbi that's defending the genocide of the Palestinian little boys and girls, which is not something that Christ would teach in a million years. Even he says the New Testament is the New Testament anti-Semitic. That's a title in Jerusalem Post, one of the leading papers in Israel. He answers, yes, 450 passages, viciously anti-Jewish. So Jews were on the periphery of history. If you think about the great Chinese civilization, if you think about the Roman civilization, if you think about the great Greek civilization, the law, the values, the principles, the education, the academia, the science of, you know, of the great Greek conqueror. If you think about Rome, the law, the values, the principles, and it was Romans ultimately that accepted the church. It was Jews that crucified Christ. In fact, Pontius Pilate tried to get out of it. And then the persecutors of the Christians became the Jews. And the people that accepted Christianity overwhelmingly were non-Jews. And it makes it real clear in the New Testament. In fact, Paul himself said, you know, but I'd be accursed because of my race. Read Corinthians. And the Jews crucified our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and oppose all men, and keep us from teaching to the Gentiles that they may be saved. They've driven us out, and they hate all mankind, but God's wrath has come upon them at last. That's what it says in the New Testament. Read it. It's there. Read Thessalonians. Read Corinthians. Read where Paul quotes Jesus Christ saying, just as I led them by the hand out of the land of Egypt, they continued not in my covenant, and I consider them not, saith the Lord. And over all this time, they had this peripheral society. They were involved in every kind of scheme, every kind of financial disgrace, every kind of loan shark and usury, which, by the way, is condemned in the Bible. They were ahead of everything, and they were hateful against every part of humanity. Then in the 20th century, they finally rose to some of their messianic dreams of power. And for the last 100 years, they led us into the greatest and most murderous time in all of human history. Because over the last 100 years, we can really go back to about 110 years, maybe a little more, to the beginning of the Second World War, First World War, and then on to the Second World War and the wars that we face since. We've had a century, a little more than a century, let's say a century plus 10, of mass murder, mass genocide. The first great genocide of that 110 years, the First World War. A war that I can show you Jewish power. The British thought Jewish power was so great in the United States, which was becoming the most powerful nation on earth. Everybody could see the writing on the wall, the size of the country, the resources of the country, the power of the country. And they made a deal with the Jews to give the Jews a place where they could have their center for their plan to take over the world in Israel. They could have that as long as they got America into the war. But these powerless Jews, as with what the Jews always tell us, it's just a camaraderie that Jews have all this power. But the British realized that they had the power, and they did get us into the war. They controlled Wilson. They called Wilson the first Jewish president, and he got us into this terrible, terrible war, caused the death of 150,000 of our people. And this war itself was a bloodletting of European mankind, Christian mankind slaughtering one another. And in many ways, it was actually the secret behind the war was the fact that the reason why Jews all over the Western world wanted the war, because they wanted a war between Germany and Russia, and they were aligned against each other. They knew that would happen, and they knew that the Tsar would probably lose because they had their sights on communist takeover of the world. Winston Churchill wrote in his book,
5 minutes, Dave.
The Secret. Thank you. Very powerfully. He said, Zionism versus Bolshevism, a struggle for the soul of the Jewish people. And he wrote in there about the Jewish takeover of the Soviet Union and of leading communism all over the world. He traced Bela Kun in Hungary, Rosa Luxemburg in Germany. He showed the fact was, and everybody knew it then, that communism was an international Jewish movement. And communism in a movement actually during peacetime in many of these countries, because the biggest slaughter of communisms were in peacetime, such as in the Soviet Union when the Jews took over Christian Russia and they murdered millions of Christians, when they took over Christian Ukraine and made that part of the Soviet Union and then murdered millions of Ukrainians and then later murdered millions of Germans. And we fought a war against Germany, even though the Jewish communists had already slaughtered 20, 30 million Europeans. And then we have a second world war after the first war, 37 million first world war, maybe God knows how many in the second world war, 55 million, 65 million, 80 million, who knows, but probably more than 100 million just in those two wars. Another 100 million people were killed by the Jewish creation of communism. And now what have we had since the Second World War? Well, the Russian people courageously and honorably overthrew communism. They restored the Christian church in Russia. They removed the Jews out of power. And ever since then, we've had a Cold War, and now we've had a great war now against Russia. Russia is not invading the West. Russia was not trying to take over the world. The Jews from the first days of communism were trying to take over the world. And now they've taken over the world, or much of the Western world anyway, through Zionism. That's the reality. And since that war, we had the Vietnam War. That was led by Mr. Rothstein in America, Mr. Kissinger in America. And Herman Kahn, who was one of the first early people who recognized the Jews were losing out in the Soviet Union, that it was only a matter of time where the Soviet Union would become free again, a Christian nation again, which it became, and that's why they hate Russia. And now they did the Holodomor in the 30s, where they killed 7 to 11 million Ukrainians, and now they're killing Ukrainians again by the hundreds of thousands. Not because of freedom. They're not restoring freedom to Ukraine. They're killing Ukrainians and they're killing Russians. And they're trying to, God knows, they're trying to destroy Europe. And not only did they wipe out the Palestinians, not only did they change the demographic of Palestine, and they did that through murder and rape and assault and terrorism, mass murder. And now they're doing it again in Gaza. And if you dare to talk about the Jewish genocide of the Gazan children and women, which is 70% of the dead. They tell you every day about October 7. How many children were killed by these terrorists, these people who are ISIS, like who they call, what do they call them? Oh, Hamas. How many children did they kill in Israel compared to the military forces? They lost 10,000 Palestinian civilians in the 10 years prior to this. They fought back, and about 1,000 people died in Israel. Most of them were troops, and most of even the women that died were all part of the Israeli military before, and they were dedicated to hating Palestinians and the mass murder of Palestine, which you're doing right now. They're worse than Nazis. We got 2 minutes then. Here we go. Here's a summation. I've just given you a short summation of the world. We had Jews 3,000 years ago with the idea they were given a great privilege by God. This is what Christians say. They were given a great privilege by God, but they had such hubris. They couldn't worship and follow the rules of God. They had to fight against God's Son, which came to bring peace and love and brotherhood to the world. Love thy neighbor as thyself, not Jewish supremacy over the world. And by the way, God wasn't trying to destroy Greeks. He wasn't trying to destroy Jews. He wasn't trying to destroy Romans. He wasn't trying to destroy anybody. He was saying that we should live in peace. God made different races. He made different cultures. He made this diversity that's the world. There's nothing wrong with people having different cultures and different languages. But there is something wrong when they try to enslave each other and kill each other and murder each other. There's something wrong with that. There's something evil about that. And that is not the way of Jesus Christ. And it's not the way of Christianity. And it's not the way of any major religion. Not even Islam believes that. Even they have a different view of that. I'm telling you the truth. The real genocidal religion is Judaism. And it's not the religion of God. They adopted the Torah, but they adopted more than the Torah. And that's the short history of the world that I felt like I needed to share to us. And anybody that has any questions about any of this original monologue for me, this off-the-cuff monologue, I'm looking forward to some of your questions during these next 2 hours.
Okay, Dave. Thank you, buddy. All right. Well, we're going to get right into it.
That's a pretty successful history of the world. 15 minutes.
I liked it. You know, a history of the world. And
I can't hardly hear David. David, Dr. Duke.
You can't hear me.
Last, can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Dave? I mean, how are you?
I can hear you. I can't hear Dave.
I can hear.
But okay.
I can hear both you guys.
Okay.
You can't hear me. You can't hear Dave Kahari.
Dave Kahari.
Okay. All right.
I can't hear Dave.
Well, at least we get that.
It's okay.
Go ahead, my friend.
Dr. Duke, last week, Dave said that our founding fathers were not Jew-wise. And I think that you agreed with him.
I think that our founding fathers definitely were Christian-oriented, for sure. They were deists, and they loved the teachings of Jesus Christ, even if not all of them believed in every aspect of the Bible as being, you know, written in stone in terms of the New Testament. But they definitely loved the teachings of Jesus Christ. They lived by those teachings, and they tried to practice by those teachings and teach each other by those teachings of being kind to people, generous to people, honest to people. And it wasn't, you know, definitely there was a dream of America, manifest destiny, you know. And by the way, just as we want Palestine from the river to the sea to be free, we know that Palestine can't be free. And we know the world can't be free. And Russia can't ultimately be free, or China can't be free, or any European country can be free until America is once again free from sea to shining sea. How is that the way to start the show? And
Dr.
I think,
Duke,
I'd
like to push back a little bit on what Dave said last week by just quoting from Benjamin Franklin. He said that, "I warn you, gentlemen, if you do not exclude Jews for all time, your children will curse you in your graves." He went on to say that in less than 200 years, they will have swarmed here in such great numbers that they will dominate and devour the land. Benjamin Franklin said that himself, right? I got that from your book, Doctor.
Yes, I believe Benjamin Franklin did say those words. I must say, I got to say this with a caveat as an historian. It's hard to prove that. But we do know that Pinckney, who was there at the Constitutional Convention and who listened to the talks of Benjamin Franklin, wrote down all this and recorded in his own writings, his notes, exactly what Benjamin Franklin said. And what he did say, he said, listen, he said, if you understand the Jews, if you don't exclude them from the United States in 200 years, he will control you. He will rule over you. He will rob you. He will steal America out from under you, and he will destroy your country and your faith and everything that's dear to you. Now, that is Jew-wise, but I'm just saying, I'm not saying that every founding father was Jew-wise, but I'm saying, because one reason why that was true is because Jews were just like I said earlier in my dialogue about the history of the world, Jews were just like a tiny periphery of mankind. Jews were like just a little blip. Again, in terms of Western civilization and culture, there were no prominent Jews really in Britain at the time. Shakespeare wrote about Jews in a disparaging way, for instance, The Merchant of Venice. He had many of the greatest poets, writers, authors of European literature, European history. Whether you talk about Dostoevsky in Russia, or whether you talk about Goethe in Germany, whether you talk about, you know, you can talk about the great poetry of English writers. And if I read some of Keats, there's amazing material that you can read in terms of the understanding they saw Jews as an enemy, not just of Jesus Christ, and it was their Christian nations, but they saw Jews as an enemy of all mankind. And I think if you look at the last 100 years, if you go a little bit longer than that, say the beginning of the First World War, I can show you the Jewish involvement in the First World War. I can show you the Jewish involvement in American involvement in the First World War. I can show you the involvement, even the founding of Israel in the First World War, which was part of the reason because the British wanted to get America into the war, because the German troops had defeated the Tsarist troops. So the entire German army on the Eastern Front was now free to come to the West. They had to get more soldiers to battle if they weren't going to lose the war. And they were desperate. And they made a deal with the Rothschilds. This is all fact of history. Lord George wrote about it. It's not denying. But this is another good example of the way they have all this power, and they're behind so many of these wars. And there's no question that Woodrow Wilson was under the thumb of Jews. Jewish financiers controlled him. Jewish financiers bankrolled his campaigns. And Jewish financiers literally saved his career, saved his life, really, because he was having an affair with another professor's wife, by the way. And he was having an affair, and he was a married man too. And he knew that in those times, if that would have come out, he would have been totally destroyed. His life would have been destroyed. And they put this over him to control him and get appointments at the Supreme Court, all these other things. They got the Federal Reserve Bank. They got all this stuff, and they got the first. So, I mean, if you just look at the rise of communism, which I can show as Jewish, and my books do that, I can show you these wars. Jews had a lot of influence. As I said before, the Second World War, Jews were writing books saying Germany must perish,
Dave,
calling for the eradication of all Germans in the world.
We got to get moving.
Okay, but that's the point. I think a couple, you know, a few moments, a few seconds didn't make any difference there. Go ahead.
It does. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Doctor.
Nice to round off points, though, right?
Thanks.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, let's bring in Goose. Goose, you got the floor, buddy.
Hey, Dave, you probably want to turn your mic up a little bit. It's really low, just so you know.
Listen,
Dave Gahari or me?
No, me.
Yeah, Dave. Yeah, Dave Gahari.
Okay. Yeah. Does it sound any better now?
It still kind of sounds like you're in one of those Jew tunnels.
Well, you should maybe turn up your mic a little bit, Dave. Just go to the tunnels on your
Oy vey.
All right.
Oy vey. Hey, Dave, I'll make this quick and let you comment and get someone else on.
Yeah, one second. Dave, you can mess with your microphone while I'm answering the question. How's that sound, Dave? Okay, go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah, have you seen that the tribe has their red heifers and their ramp and their little slaughter stage all set in Israel, ready for March 28th? For the second coming on April 7th or April 8th. Have you seen that?
Well, they have also, I've heard about second comings for a long time. We'll see whether the second coming of the next Jewish Antichrist comes or not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We should remember now that the New Testament, actually, again, the most anti-Semitic book ever written by the nature of that. Now, remember, something's anti-Semitic when they say they put big signs on office buildings, projections from projectors on office buildings saying a ceasefire in Gaza is anti-Semitic. Well, of course it is. You know, opposing the mass murder and maiming of tens of thousands of Palestinian little children, boys and girls. And by the way, many of them are Christians. One of the oldest Christian churches in the world was also bombed, and they murdered people in that church. I mean, you can't make up what they're doing. Now, the New Testament, and of course, all the evangelicals talk about that. And they all tell you, yeah, the Antichrist is coming and they're going to rebuild the temple and the Antichrist is going to sit in it. And the New Testament talks a lot about the Antichrist. It also identifies the Antichrist as all those who say they're of the Father, but not of the Son. And at that time, by the way, that's the only people that can refer to are Jews. And the fact is that the idea that the Antichrist has come and the idea that somehow Christians should support this is one of the, is the most evil and the most unchristian and the most blasphemous ever words any Christian could ever say. Are they literally telling us that they want the enemy of Christ, the Antichrist, to come to power? Because by having this trick or this fact that that's going to bring Christ back, Christ got to come, right? We have to have the Antichrist come first, right? And rape and murder 90% of humanity, all the little children of humanity, whites, blacks, yellows, green. I feel like I'm talking about a Christmas song now. I mean, you can't make it up, right? Is this really? Is this what a Christian is supposed to believe? Let's go clap for the Antichrist. Let's go clap for the people who murdered Jesus Christ. Let's clap for the damn devil.
Dave, it's so maddening. I live in the South. And I have people in my own family that are these Baptist dispensationalists. And Baptist dispensationalism is a mind virus. And it is false doctrine. And it is evil. Evil, evil, evil.
And you know what? Baptists at the turn of the century didn't even believe in that.
No, God, no. God, no. That would have been heresy.
Our grandparents and everything. I've been a Baptist. I went to Baptist school. I went to a Baptist, also Church of Christ. And fundamental evangelicalism was never about the Jews. It was always about Jesus Christ. And the only, it's just like Billy Graham said, and every, I went to a number of his missions. You know, I saw him at Tulane Stadium in New Orleans when Billy Graham came. I was there. And I remember that the day he said, the only way to God, the only way to everlasting life, the only way to salvation, the only way to personal redemption is through Jesus Christ, Christ alone. And no other thing can save you. And now you have a lot of Baptists running around, talk about being sick and in the brain, saying that Jews don't have to believe in Christ. No, Jews are anti-Christ. And the Jewish Talmud, which they revere literally, says that Jewish magicians, Jewish Satanists, basically, conjure up Jesus Christ from the grave and are torturing him and burning him in excrement, human excrement for eternity.
Yeah, I think we all know what it says. We don't even have to repeat it, right? Well, we all know it.
Well, you know, but half of the, I guarantee you that 95% of any new person that comes to the show right now doesn't know.
Yeah.
They don't know anything. Because they live in a Jewish world. They live in a Jewish-controlled media. They live in a Jewish-controlled political system where they totally control the political money. And they live in a world that basically deplatforms, silences, imprisons, tortures, and murders people that don't. And that's why they murdered the Tsar and his family. That's why they killed the Russians by the millions. That's why they killed the Ukrainians by the millions. That's why they gave us the First and Second World War, which was a Christian fratricide.
Yeah, and you've got all these people saying, oh, they're not the real Jews. Well, you know, they say,
The real Jews, all right.
Yeah, they killed Christ. They were there when they killed Christ, right? So, and they call themselves Jews, so I'm going to call them Jews until we figure out otherwise, right? You know,
remember what St. Paul said. Just read it right out. Just read it right out of his own words, and where he said, "quote." He said, "But I would be accursed by my race. But I'd be accursed." But he says, "Thank God, you know, the people who are not my people, as it says," he said in the Old Testament, "the people who are not my people will become my people, and the people who were my people will become the enemies of God." He even said that in his own words. Now, he said salvation's open for everyone, of course. But that doesn't change the fact that he understood. Jesus' life was a struggle against the Jewish elite that controlled Judaism, just like the Judaism of today is controlled by the same anti-Christian Jews. Who do these evangelicals think controls Hollywood, for God's sakes?
Thank you, guys. Okay, like Christ said, you are of your father, the devil, and I'll get off.
We'll get you back in.
That's true. Let's quote that one quote before we go to the next call.
Okay, let's see.
Jesus Christ said, quote, this is in John 8:44. And by the way, the same chapter 8, they talk about know the truth and the truth will set you free. He's talking to these evil Jews that were controlling the Talmud, the oral tradition of Judaism, which way they're putting the Talmud. And they're calling Christ an idolater, a charlatan. And that's why they crucified him, basically. And Christ says to them, he says, quote, he's talking to the Pharisees. He's talking to the Jewish elite, just like there's a Jewish elite today with the George Soros's of the world, right? And other Jews like them, right? He says, quote, to them, ye and ye fathers are the sons of the devil, and the lust of ye father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth, because there is no truth in him. His essence is of simply the lie, and he's the father of all lies. And if you really look at the media, that's the problem we have. It's not even the politicians are a result of the media. The people who control the businesses and
Dave, we got to get to the next call.
It's all part of the same process, folks. For God's sakes, open your eyes. If they're not open already, dedicate yourself to changing this.
How do I sound, guys? Guys and gals,
I think
send a message. I know I sound good. Okay, cool. All right, I switch mics. I have no idea. Okay, I have no idea why it's doing that. Okay, Catherine, go ahead. Do you have a question or comment for the good Dr. Duke?
Hi, greetings to everybody.
Greetings.
I just like to have him talk about Kristi Noem and Ron DeSantis and what's involved in those.
Well, do you have anything like specific that you want to ask?
Well,
remember, this is 2-minute answers. So give us a question or a comment that he can answer in 2 minutes.
He wants to say something about DeSantis. I mean,
well, what do you want him to comment on? Like how she looks, her body, her plastic surgery?
The effects on us, like how this could affect us.
Okay, well, there you go. That's specific.
Well, here's the situation. All right. First of all, we got to be straight, and this is a good question because it helps us get to the core of the question. Now, you hear all the time, they'll tell you something like, the Zionists are a problem. Look what they're doing in Gaza. Zionists are a big problem. But actually, there's a lot more Zionist, Christians than there are Jewish Zionists, because they've got the Christian Zionists, voting for Jews and supporting Jews. But that is completely a fundamental untruth lie, because except for Jewish power, there wouldn't even be Christian Zionists. Except for the fact that Jews control the media and the movies, there wouldn't be Jewish Zionists. There are Jewish Zionists or Christian Zionists. You can't even say the word together because it doesn't fit. It's like saying Christian Satanists, right? It's like Christian Antichrists, right? Saying Christian Zionists. But if you look at it, honestly, all right? No. Christian Zionists aren't more powerful than Jews. Were Christian Zionists 90% of the funding for Hillary Clinton? No. Were Christian Zionists the ones that controlled Trump and turned him against his own people by the fact they gave him so much money? Sheldon Adelson and Marcus and all those people, which are an insurance policy? No. Is it Christian Zionists that run YouTube? No. And if it silences, is it Christian Zionists that run Facebook under Zuckerberg? No. Is it Christian Zionists that run all these major tech companies, the biggest media corporations on earth, like AT&T, which is run by Jews? Thank you. We can just keep going on. Walt Disney, which used to be a Christian studio, now run by the Jew Iger And before that, it was Eisner producing pro-LGBTQ, anything promoting the cutting off of our children's reproductive organs, destroying our seed as white people. My God, you can't get worse than that. I mean, this is the reality. It's not Christian Zionists. But there is a problem in that the Jews can't maintain their power without having collaborators. Now, the way they did it in Spain was they had Moorish invaders, and then they were the ones that were the go-between. They were the ones who were the administrators of the Moorish government that ruled Spain. They did the same thing, by the way, in Malta. They did the same thing in Sicily. They did the same thing in other parts of the kingdom. When the slave traders, the Khazars, the Muslim slave traders, Muslims were involved in slave trade, just like some Christians were, but Jews dominated the slave trade. And even in the...
Dave, Catherine asked about DeSantis and the governor from
South Dakota. So I'm giving you a roundabout answer. What I'm trying to explain is DeSantis is nothing more than a toady to the Jews. He sold his soul for his political advancement to these
Jews.
How
is it going to affect us? That's what she was asking.
It's going to affect us because that's the way Jews have to work. They got to get Christians out there saying, oh, you're going to be a good Christian if you support the Jews. So you can support every sort of anti-Christian Jewish power. Communism, which killed millions of Christians, which killed millions of Ukrainians, which killed millions and millions of Christians in European wars against one another. They're going to tell you, oh, Jews are our friends. If you're really a good Christian, you're going to support the Jews, while all they've done over the last 100 years is kill millions upon millions and millions of Christians in these Jewish wars and this Jewish destruction of our culture and our heritage. And of course, the changing of our demography, the changing of our demographics to destroy us in our own nations. They are doing to Europe exactly what they did to Palestine. That's where these leftists are. So they're screwed up, just like right-wingers are screwed up when they control the right wing through the neocons, and they control the Republican Party still secretly through the neocons, because they already control the left. So they told the left, right, this is not the Sanders, it's the other side of the equation. It's the Bernie Sanders of the world, right? And the Steyers of the world, the Bloombergs of the world, and the Schumers of the world. They tell the left, the whole thing about Israel is, oh, yeah, these are just white colonials. This is nothing more than apartheid, or this is European colonialism. No, it's not European colonialism. It's Jewish genocide in Palestine. And the truth is, yes, white people conquered a lot of the world. Genghis Khan conquered a lot of the world. Attila the Hun conquered a lot of the world. I mean, come on, let's go. A lot of South America was conquered by the Aztecs and the Incas. And then you had Indian tribes in Americas killing each other. But there was never a greater, more violent and vicious racism, supremacism, and genocide than what Jews do. And you can just look at what Netanyahu said about the Amalekites.
Okay.
Than a collaborator with the Jewish enemy that's destroying our families and our future.
All right, Catherine, we'll get you back in. And
I hope
please,
I
when,
answered that question adequately.
When I, when you're there, you're whatever you're doing, you're shuffling around and there's a lot of noise.
Me?
Catherine.
I'm in the supermarket.
Yeah, right. There you go. So I have to mute you, just so
that's
you know.
Fine.
All right, we'll get you back in. Yep. Okay, Jimmy, go ahead, buddy. The floor is yours.
Hey, guys. Hi, Dave Gehary, Dr. Duke. Hey, happy St. Pat's Day.
Oh, man. Hey, thank you. I should have said that earlier. You beat me to it.
Yeah, I was celebrating. I had a few beers at the celebration here in St. Louis.
Were they green beers?
No, I didn't have the green beers, but.
Well, you earned it then.
Right. Hey, I got a question about. Ireland. I was always a big admirer of the IRA, you know, fighting back. And what do you think? Did the Jews have anything to play with being a part against the Irish on, you know, with the?
Listen. Here's the thing. Look, I am a person that totally agrees with the Irish resistance to the tyranny that they suffered under the. under the British. There's no question. And this is not the right way for white people to treat other white people. And I think that's one reason why I like the message of Jesus Christ, because first and foremost, where we apply these messages is going to be our own people or people related to us, the people we're around, the countries we're neighboring, right? European nations. And I don't think there's anywhere in the Bible that says if some invader comes in, especially a non-Christian, if you think about it that way, or just any invader, they come in, that tries to steal your children, you know, and press them into slavery or prostitution or whatever, sell your children. I don't think there's nothing in Christianity that says you don't have the right to resist evil, that you don't have the right to resist a criminal or a murderer or an invader, you know. But I think the first place you start with Christianity, what I believe, and this is the message that is most, I think most comes home. This is one thing great about going to Christian churches, because maybe sometimes people don't get the message and Christians fight among themselves and Christian families often fight against each other. And, you know, a lot of hatred will come out, brother against sister, kids against their parents, parents against their kids. This kind of stuff, well, just it'll happen, right? But the message that most people are getting in the church is you love each other. And the Christian church says to kids, love your parents. And it says, parents, you know, take care of your kids. And I think it basically says as well that, you know, that blessed are the peacemaker. And if you think about it, most of the wars fought in this world are what you could call almost civil wars, even brother against brother. And when European Christian nations fight each other, they're fighting against every principle they have of Christianity in a real sense. That's not meaning that they won't fight over those things. They shouldn't fight over those things. But if you just go to the teachings of Christ, so I do believe in the idea, and this is one of the greatest aspects of Christianity. It's one reason why I am a Christian. In addition to the salvation I feel I have from Christ, because I have a communication spiritually and with God, with this force in the universe that exists and hopefully can guide us to morality and decency and human kindness. But the fact is that Christianity is probably one of the greatest forces in the world. It can be, especially if we stress it, to stop the fighting between brother and sister, between parents and children. You know, and through our relatives, and we are the relatives of all other Christians. We are the same. You know, America proved that we could get along pretty good together as Europeans, even if we're Greeks or Italians or whether we're Scandinavians or Vikings or whether we're Irish or British or Germans or Slavic peoples or Russians. You know, we can get along with each other. If we share this spiritual thing, and kind of America kind of proved that. And the truth is that I'll tell you something else that was positive about Christianity. And I know there's been some negative things about some Christians because some people and Jews want to interpret for us Christianity and tell us that this means we should sell out our race. This means we shouldn't believe that there are white people and black people and there's differences between us. It never says that. In fact, it wasn't even about the institution of slavery. I mean, there was one case when slaves escaped from their masters and they asked, the apostles, should they be sent back to their masters or should they be set free? And they said they should be sent back to their masters. I mean, and it wasn't because they didn't know that there was oppression in the world or there was, maybe that's not the ideal situation. I'm against slavery. But at the same time, what it was about was it's about a salvation to God or trying to do the good of God. And no matter what your circumstances, if you're in prison, there are people in prison that should be there because they've done really terrible things, right? But while you're in prison, you know, do good, right? Treat each other justly. Don't just keep keeping people, killing them. You've been raping, just keep raping people. No, it's really about treating people who you're with and treat people who you know and people that you run into every day. Because if you really look at it, you know, people that are non-familiar crimes, not people in your family, There are more crimes always between friends and people that know each other and family members than there are people from outside of our families. And sometimes there's wars and invasions. But this is the principle of love and human rights and human feelings that we have to preach. This is one great thing about Christianity that we should really promote in our communities and our churches and in our societies today.
Sure. Hey, Dave, thanks a lot, man. That makes me feel better. And we sure missed you for being our president. You would have been a good one.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, Jimmy. We'll get you back in. Okay.
That's something I never hear today, you know, what I just said. I've never really got much of a chance to express that before. That's why I like these questions and answers, because it was a good question, and it led to, I think, a very important concept. Not only do we have to fight our internal enemies with all of our might and our abilities and save our future and our freedoms and our very existence as a people and our faith and everything else that's important to us, but we also, you can't even begin to do this until you kind of heal the rifts in your own family and in our own hearts against people we connect with, people at our school, people at our church, people at our whatever, in our business place, until we put more love in our hearts, more forgiveness in our hearts for each other. And that doesn't mean that we should, you know, we should take somebody into our place that wants to kill us or rob us or whatever that, or subject your children to a pedophile, you know, right? What it means is, though, that we really got to try to create a society of true brotherhood. And I think when our founding fathers, and they talked about brotherhood from sea to shining sea, they were talking about that, treating people respectfully. And they were basically talking about Europeans, because that was the ethic of America, because that was the vision of America, the continuation of Christianity and European Western civilization.
And that's what the Jews hate.
They hate that because they don't want a unity by our people, because they know that unity by our people is the only thing that can stop them taking over and destroying our people. How's that for an answer?
Perfect. We got Nick, Militia Man.
A quick question, which may have been in the months that I've been listening to you, Dr. Duke. You've probably mentioned.
Sure.
Because I just heard today, and I said, well, I don't remember that. Have you lived in Russia? And when
yes,
was
I lived
that?
In Russia. I lived in Russia for 5 years. I actually worked many days. I was Solzhenitsyn. Side by side, I went into the Russian archives with him. I went to the Bibliothek in Moscow with him. I can't tell you how many times we would break for lunch, or we'd meet at Yorkie Park, which was right down the street from where I lived. I lived in what was called the Dom de Naborizhny, which was the house or the place, the apartment building that Stalin built. And it was actually the place where a lot of the aficionados of the Bolshevik regime under Stalin lived. They call it Stalin's house. And this was very interesting because it was built with these secret passages, you know, these areas so they could spy on these other elites. So Stalin basically could spy. And there's a museum in the building, by the way, that was created from Stalin times. And right in the Museum of the Dom de Naborizhny, I owned an apartment there. I bought an apartment there when I was there and refurbished it. It didn't cost very much at all, but I had it rented for a very good price. But anyway, at that time. But anyway, in the museum, they show you all the people that lived in the Dom de Naborizhny that were killed by Stalin. And by the way, many, many, many of them were Jews, along with some Goyim. But it's really amazing. You can go in the museum in the apartment building. And of course, this is all privatized under Putin because they got rid of communism. But yes, I lived in Russia. I worked with Alexander Solzhenitsyn. It was one of the greatest periods of my life. It was an inspiring period of my life. He taught me so much, and he was really a light to me. And he helped me, I think, evolve into some of my views about not only Russia, but of the world. And he endeared me to Russian Orthodoxy, which I think is a very fine Christian religion. I'm not technically Russian Orthodox. I have a daughter I'm very proud of that is Russian Orthodox. But so I'm more traditional in terms of American Christianity Protestant Christianity, but I'm also very pro-Catholic in a way too. I'm not pro-Pope for sure, but because I don't.
What years were was that?
Around 2000 to 2005. And
so you were over there when 9/11 happened then?
I was actually in Moscow when 9/11 happened. I remember watching it on television. And within a few hours, I was explaining to people why it happened. And it happened because of the Jewish takeover of American foreign policy. And it right. happened because of the fact that in fact Al-Qaeda itself, if we were aware of this even at the time, we knew that Al-Qaeda itself was financed by the American government. It was actually used to fight against Russia. Now, what Americans didn't understand as much then that I learned very clearly under Solzhenitsyn, and I knew this even from the time I went to Vietnam. I've told that story before, too, which is an interesting little story if we had time for it. I don't know. I ran into the back of a Russian embassy car when I worked in Vientiane, Russia. I was teaching the Laotian Army and Air Force officers. And a big blonde Russian got out. And I had to avoid a bicycle from not killing this woman that cut in front of me. But anyway, I ran into the back of a Russian embassy car. And the Russian saw it. And we started talking. And this guy was, you know, as white as anybody you ever saw in Texas. He looked like a tall Texan. And the only thing he missed was cowboy boots and cold blue eyes and just, you know, just an amazing Aryan guy. And so we start talking about Russia. And I was talking about how I didn't like Nixon's trip at the time to China with Mao Zedong. And what he said to me changed my life in many ways. He said to me, in fact, we talked between a little bit of Russian, which I was studying a bit, and English, and a little German as well. But he says, we white people must stick together. Now, that's a guy I was taught to think of these communist SOBs, right, the danger to humanity and everything. And here's a Russian guy telling me, you know, yeah, we white people have to stick together. I mean, that was pretty amazing. And that's when I knew some of this because in the 1960s, late 60s, I was reading Con McGinley's Common Sense based on the Common Sense from the Great American Patriot. And he talked about the fact that the same Jews that created the NAACP, the same Jews that created communism, they were losing out their power in Russia. And few conservatives wanted to believe that. But Jews already understood that because they couldn't stand it. Because by the 1950s and 60s, they even adopted laws in the late in the middle 50s and the early 60s, death penalty for Zionist treason to Russia, death penalty for Zionists. I mean, this shows you the fact that that's why. You had the whole Russiagate thing. That's why you had the impeachment of Donald Trump. That's why you've got the war right now with Christian Russia. It's because the Russians, but this was happening years before actual communism was overthrown. They already, by the 1950s, started reinstating the Christian church. They started teaching family, teaching none of this Adorno stuff like the Frankfurt School, critical race theory.
Dave, hold on. We got to do a top of the hour. Okay, folks, this is Dave Gahary and David Duke on the David Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. Thank you for that, Nick. It is 7 o'clock, actually. Jeez. It's 7:01 Central Time, and we're going into the second hour of the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. Let's get back to the show.
All right, let's do it.
Go ahead, Dave.
So, I'll finish up on that question. It's an important point, and it's very vital. They always play us one against the other. And I must tell you something. My dad was a full colonel. He was in the Second World War. He, like every American, was very proud of his service in the war. At the same time, he was very suspicious of Franklin Roosevelt. He didn't like Franklin Roosevelt. And he even understood that we were nudged into the war, not nudged, we were driven into the war through a plot by the President of the United States and the Jews around him, the Blumenthals and those powerful people, these financiers in Wall Street. Bernard Baruch, for instance, was one of the big financiers of Roosevelt. And he was a tool of the Jews, just like Woodrow Wilson was. Both Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt ran on, he'll keep you out of the war. And the first thing they do is they work to get in the war. So this entire war was created. And the Germans wouldn't take the bait. There was actually, when my father was in Vietnam, we had part of our home was rented out, an extra bedroom, to a diver that worked at a local diving company down in New Orleans with the Ricks. And he served in the war. So this was in the 1960s. And he served in the Second World War. And he was on a frigate, American frigate. And they were literally firing volleys. This is before the war started. They were firing volleys of, you know, of the ship's guns, trying to just, you know, go over the ship like they're firing at the German ship. And he said that everybody in the ship knew that if the German ship sank, you know, fired back, they were goners. But they were under orders to do this. And everybody talked about it. You know, they're doing this because they want a Second World War. And they want an excuse for that. Now, that's personal testimony that I got from somebody. But my father gave me a book called The Final Secret of Pearl Harbor, which was written with forewords by Admiral Kimmel and these other admirals at Pearl Harbor, which gave the proof. Of course, they were anxious to defend themselves. They gave the proof that Roosevelt had evidence. They broke the Japanese code. They knew the Japs were coming to Pearl Harbor. But they so wanted a bad incident. They so wanted it to be as bad as it could happen because they wanted to make sure it wasn't something minor that would get us into the war. They might not have expected 3,000 American dead, but that's what they got. But this is because they didn't give the information to our commanders at Pearl Harbor, even though Washington, D.C. broke the code and got us. So they used Pearl Harbor to get us through the, quote, back door of war. And that's why, again, the Germans, and by the way, the Germans were bound by treaty and agreement with the Japanese to have, you know, if you're attacked by any other country, that you have to go to war. And that was why we entered. That's how we entered the First World War, Second World War, because they, you know, we knew that they knew that. And this was all intentional. So, I mean, this was a great tragedy, and the Jewish influence, Blumenthal and Morgenthau was another one. Morgenthau's diet, by the way, from the Germans, proposed diet for post-war Germany, was just like in what Germany Must Perish book by Theodore Kaufmann praises a great idea of the plan, the whole extermination of Jews. Blumenthal, Morgenthau actually wanted a calorie diet for the Germans of 800 calories a day, which is starvation diet. You know, they wanted to feed them something so they don't violate the Geneva Convention. By the way, they got out of following the Geneva Convention to the German prisoners of war. They killed 1 million after the war, a million of these normal German soldiers. The Germans, the Russians didn't kill us, and the Germans didn't kill American soldiers, prisoners of war. They didn't torture them. They didn't kill them. We killed 1 million after the war when we had plenty of food in the warehouses. And this is, read Backe's Other Losses. This is all fact, folks. It can be proven. And the original diet they proposed for the German population, men, women, and children, was 800 calories a day. That's starvation diet. And they wanted, and they declassified the German prisoners of war instead of having them after the war is over, right? And they should be freed. That's the way you're supposed to do it with the Geneva Convention. No. What they did was they declassified them as prisoners of war to, what was the term, Dave? I think you probably remember it. I know you've read Backe. Dave, you there? You still there? Hope he didn't go to the kitchen or something.
Muted. Yeah, they classified them as non-combatants. I don't know if it was enemy combatants
or something of that long.
Something like that. But yeah.
Anyways, I'll find out. They just did a yeah. We could look it up quickly, but anyway, that Anyway, so they declassified them so they wouldn't have to follow the Geneva Convention so they could starve them to death. They kept them in, you know, Germany's a pretty cold country in December and January and February. It's very cold, inhospitable. It rains a lot. It's wet. They kept them on open ground, no tents, not even a tarpaulins on the ground. They kept them in cold, freezing mud and snow. And they would just throw them some food once in a while over the barbed wire fences. This was a massive, massive, torturous destruction of people. And they all got sick.
Disarmed enemy forces.
That's right.
Disarmed enemy forces.
Now, all these things are true, folks. And I'm just opening your eyes for those who just, you've never heard of this before in your life. That's why we're here today, to let you. You're getting to the even to the very corners of my memories and my mind and my learning in my life that I can share with all of you on all these subjects. And that's why we have this show. And I appreciate the questions because they help us answer these questions. I hope I'm answering the questions in a way that you can understand the depth of the depravity of these Zionist rulers. And again, I say this to all the leftists listening. So I know there's some out there listening to this. They're doing to the European people, and that's your people, by the way, most of you leftist guy people who have traditions of Western liberalism, like freedom of speech and thought and justice and rights. And Europeans have a right to preserve themselves and their society and their nation and their people, and that their children grow up with their diversity, with their human expressions, the same as any other people, including Palestinians, including Africans in Africa. Are Indians in the Americas or wherever they are people in Australia and the Australian outback, right? Everybody's got those rights, including Europeans. And anybody that can't understand that they've tried to consciously destroy European consciousness, European heritage and values in the same way they've tried to do the same thing to Palestinians and every other people in the world. And that's exactly what's going on. It's just as evil what's happening to European countries as what's happened to the Palestinians and what's happened to any Africans in terms of white colonialism. But white colonialism was never even a shade close to what Jewish Zionist supremacism is. And Jewish supremacism in Israel could not exist, and genocide in Israel, what's going on right now, folks, could not exist except for Jewish supremacism in America and the Jewish taking out of the American leadership, which will have led this country not to support Israel, because obviously it was never in our interest to go to these wars. It was never in our interest to support Israel. And we alienated all the oil companies and all those oil lands, which we needed for the oil, supposedly. We didn't help ourselves by supporting Israel. We hurt ourselves.
All right, we got to get to the next call, Dave.
And committed terrorism not only against
us. All right, thank you, Nick.
Against us.
All right, buddy.
You can just let me finish with a sentence or two. That's all. I'm finished.
I can't because
well,
then
you
the
did
next,
it. It's fine.
Then the next sentence comes. The next sentence follows it.
No, it doesn't. Not all. Once you call me out, I try to wrap.
Who knows you, man?
You don't know me because Nick.
Oh, I know.
Call
Come
me
on.
Out, it takes me about another minute at max to finish up.
All right, Dave. All right.
And it's all. And let me tell you, most people are listening right now. I think they'll find that minute's worth it.
Yes.
For the next question. See you later. I think it is.
All right.
Now let the people decide. Anybody, you can all vote on that if you think that little minute that I had in the last minute or two, if that's worth it. But it's up to you guys and ladies.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let's get to the next caller, Dave.
Okay.
Because we are a call-in show, of course.
But I don't think we have many trans listening, so we don't have to mention the trans.
There's no such a thing as trans. It's, you know, they think that. There's such a thing, but there isn't. Okay, Robert, go ahead, buddy.
That's transmorgified. We just call them
the
transmorgified.
Mogrified, yeah.
How does that, what is the definition of transmorgification?
I'll look it up while Robert's asking his question.
Yeah, look that up. Transmorgification. Right. Is that a word? If it's not a word, it should be. Let's invent it if it's not a word. Transmorgification.
Transmogrify.
Yeah, transmogrify. What does that mean?
To transform in a surprising or magical manner.
That's not good enough. We need no, something that's,
a good that's word.
No, we need something that's like, you know, like something like a morgue, you know, transmogrification.
Right.
Because when people change to, for instance, a homosexual, they live 20 years shorter lives, right? So they transmogrify to the morgue.
Oh, that's a shame, man.
It is a shame.
Yeah.
I don't wish badness on anyone.
I guess they can't control themselves. I don't know.
Well, it's not helping them.
Yeah, poor bastards.
But when they had a little limitation society, it definitely saved a lot of their lives. When they couldn't go to a bathhouse and get screwed by 36 people in 3 hours, you know, in the wrong places, when they couldn't do that, they actually had a bigger chance to survive, and they never would have the AIDS epidemic that took millions of them. I mean, it's amazing how that if we would have had our way in keeping society sane and healthy and normal and natural and mentally not ill but mentally healthy, that they would also had a lot less suffering and lived a lot longer life.
Short-term gain, short-term pleasure, right? Yeah. Go ahead, Robert.
Dr. Duke, Disney produces anti-Christian films today. What do you think about Walt Disney before the Jews took it over?
Well, I tell you, I grew up watching Walt Disney, and I loved Walt Disney. I mean, I was just watching the other day a story. This is an interesting story. This is the kind of thing we can do on a show like this with different questions. I watched the film, you know, Uncle Remus. And I watched some of the cartoons that was done by Disney. And by the way, this first black actor that really won the Academy Award, male actor, he won Academy Award. He did a great part of Uncle Remus where he tells stories to the black children on the plantation, the white children, a lot of moral, you know, lessons and so forth. So I was watching the tales of Uncle Remus just because I wanted to see this again. I remember as a kid. And the interesting story, I was watching the story of Br'er Rabbit and the fox, you know, and how the fox was trying to eat Br'er Rabbit. So he was going to trap Br'er Rabbit. He came up with the idea. He saw Br'er Rabbit coming down the road, and he decided to take a tar. So he had a tar pit, and he picked up the tar, and he picked up and he made a tar baby. Like a little black baby. And they put buttons on for the eyes and put a straw hat on him and so forth. And so he put a fishing pole in his hand, and Br'er Rabbit comes by. And so the fox says, now we got him. And so Br'er Rabbit comes by and says, good morning to you. How you doing? You're such a cute black baby. And the tar baby doesn't answer. And Br'er Rabbit starts getting offended. Why aren't you saying nice things to me? Why aren't you saying nice to me? Why are you ignoring me? Why are you, why you're not talking to me? And of course, the tar baby can't talk, but the tar baby's made of tar. And eventually, Br'er Rabbit got so angry, which shows you also keep your Christian ways about you, by the way. And finally, Br'er Rabbit hauls off and smacks the tar baby. He gets stuck. And then the more he smacks him, the more he gets stuck, until finally the rabbit gets totally consumed, and now the fox is getting ready to consume him. And the moral of the story goes this way. This is the end of the story, which is a lot of good truth in a lot of these stories that Disney would make. So the fox says, well, I'm going to cook you. And he says, yeah, that's fine. Put me in the stew. Cook me. That's fine. But please don't throw me in that briar patch. Remember that, Dave? Did you ever remember that when you were a kid? Don't throw me in that briar patch, please. And then he says, well, maybe I should hang you, whatever. And then they said, okay. Br'er Rabbit says, okay, please hang me. That'd be fine. I'd love you to hang, but please don't. So he ends up throwing him in the briar patch, which is so the rabbit escapes. And sometimes that's an interesting reverse psychology, right? But anyway, it's an interesting story. And it also shows you, and what I was thinking about doing the other day on my show, I never did it, but I thought about it. I can do it right now. That's exactly what they've done in all these wars, right? They set up a tar baby the Tar Baby hadn't done anything to us. They pretended like the Tar Baby was making us up. So we started slapping them. Then we started getting caught into it. We got our own people hurt by it, damaged by it, right? Tied up in these horrific wars with unbelievable casualties, not only of our people, but the people who didn't do anything against us, because we just got enmeshed by this Jewish lies and these Jewish conflicts and these Jewish wars. Isn't that a great analogy for what we got going on in the world? And we see it right now going on in Israel. We see it now going on in Ukraine, right? And the danger even of atomic war. This is exactly like the Tar Baby story, I think. And that's exactly, it's kind of a, it's almost like a story of how Jews get us in these terrible wars that only hurt us. And the fact is they just get them enmeshed in this war, caught in these wars, stuck to the tar of these wars, and against people that haven't done a thing against, the same way Saddam was saying didn't do a thing. He was our ally, by the way, until we got in that stupid war that cost hundreds of thousands of them, tens of thousands of us, destroyed millions of families.
That was a good answer, Dr. Duke. Well done. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. We'll get you back in.
Glad buddy. You enjoyed that story. I got a chance to write it to you. What do you think of that story, guys and ladies?
All right. We're going to bring in Goose.
You have any comments on that story?
Dave, I love all your stories.
Well, how about that? What do you think? Isn't that a good analogy, though?
It was a great
analogy. The Tar Baby is exactly
yes.
the way the Jews
the Jew is. Look, the Jew is always scheming. The Jew is always multiple steps ahead of us. Yeah. The Jew meets in their synagogue, and they scheme. They figure out ways to hurt us.
They get us to attack people who didn't even hurt us. Like Germany didn't hurt us. Just like, you know, Russia didn't hurt us. Just like Ukraine didn't hurt us, but they're destroying Ukraine. It's just amazing what they do. That the Jews of Israel committed terrorism against the United States of America. They attack on USS Liberty, you've talked about so often. The attack on the American installations or American settlements, expat communities in what was Egypt. And they also
attack Jews.
Yeah.
They don't care. Anything, the ends justify the means.
That's right.
For these savages. Goose, go ahead, buddy. You got the floor.
Hey, yeah, Dave. I love those old Disney cartoons. From what I understand, Mr. Disney was pretty based, right? He kind of knew what was going on. I think he even did a little propaganda for the SS, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe the German-American Bund. I'm not sure.
Here's the thing about him now. He was very much against the war. There's no question about that. He was opposed to the war. He wanted peace, which was a decent point of view. After the attack on Pearl Harbor and war was declared, he felt that he had to support the war, and he helped the war effort any way he could. And, that put people in a very hard position when your sons and daughters and your friends are going off to war, or, you know, are your own, you know, people going to go off to war. It's very difficult at that point to say this isn't a moral war and I want my son to survive and my daughter to survive. We shouldn't make this war. We should make peace. We should not go to this total war and destroy another Christian country. We should not cause the death of hundreds of thousands of people. We certainly shouldn't bomb and burn alive hundreds of thousands of German women and children, because we had laws against that before. We had the Geneva Conventions. We violated international law by doing that. And the Germans were not the ones that started those kinds of things. But all that's another, it's hard to follow that kind of position when you have your son. The same way I think that a lot of people in the South, I think the people were in favor of independence. But I think they wanted independence without war. And I think they were praying for war till the end, not to have war, and that the North would let the South just go its own way by showing the fact that democratically, as just like the Declaration of Independence says that every people's got a right to determine their own government. It's kind of hypocritical, isn't it, to say the South can't do that? But the South did do that with plebiscites and votes of the people. But, you know, but it's the same thing. But it's very difficult once you get into a war, and that puts people in untenable positions. I think my father would have been against the war and was against the war and tell it. My father really liked Charles Lindbergh, as far as I understand. And so, yeah, I mean, but once the war started, you know, he was already in the, he was in ROTC in college way back at, that we're talking about the 20s then. And then, like I told people on this broadcast a number of times, he actually brought the orders. He actually was the courier as an officer, major at the time, I think he was, to Eisenhower, who was on maneuvers in Louisiana, by the way. And he brought the orders to Eisenhower to pack up and go to Europe and you know, organize and go to Britain and organize the invasion at Normandy, in effect. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, quick follow-up, Dave Gehary, I'll be quick. There's a lot of young men. You know, I am no longer a young man. I am, you know, well past a young man, that are getting disenfranchised. They see these white kids getting their heads split open at school. They're getting angry. They're getting disenfranchised. They're becoming dissidents. Rightfully so. They should be. But a lot of the energy is going towards, like, you know, saying the N-word and freaking out. And, you know, sometimes I think that can draw a lot of people away. Whereas the true heart of National Socialism, you know, is the natural world, the natural order. And I think it's better for us to stay on track preaching that, you know, the natural order. We don't want anyone hurt. We just want to bring things back to the natural way. So if you could maybe comment on that.
Well, you know, the communists, by the way, were the biggest deniers of human rights ever in the history of the world, yet they painted themselves as the ultimate human rights fighters, right? As they paint themselves in every conflict in the world. And then they proceed to kill tens of millions of people and do more tyranny and more torture and more horrors in the world's name. So, but even so, but this is a lesson though. Even the communists don't paint themselves as people trying to oppress others or enslave others or hurt others or use negative words about people. They paint themselves in the term of human rights. And that's a good question that all of us must ask ourselves individually. I had to ask that question to myself at a very young age, right? So there is one flavor of white people in the South that were saying, okay, we're losing our race, we're losing our school system, you know, and we have to fight. And we also, you know, that this is a revolution and we've got to fight a revolution. And whatever it takes, right? Or another position was that we have to save our people by awakening them to the fact that our cause is just, that our cause is the very basis of human rights, that what we want for our people is nothing more than the human rights of our people. And at the same time, we're not like these others. My whole life, I understood about these evil Jewish wars. I understood that these wars were terrible to human life, to human freedom, that they were far more damaging to people like the Second World War or the First World War, far more damaging than anything that we allege from those countries. Even communism was far less damaging than if we would have gone to war against the communists in the Second World War and had tens of millions of people killed. You might not have ever had the very good revolution within communism against the Jews if we would have killed or gone to war against the communists, because the best of the Russians would have been murdered in the war along with the best of Americans and the best of all Europeans. Think about that. The genetic cost, the human cost, the physical cost, the damage and the human suffering that would go on from that. So I was wrong when I thought we should invade Russia, you know, or at least when I looked at it historically, because it was long after my time, that wasn't an option. My father almost thought we could. He liked Patton's idea of going on to Moscow, but I'm glad we didn't.
Well, if we did it, we should have done it with Uncle and not without Uncle. Right.
Uncle A, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, if there was going to be, yeah, is a conflict, because, you know, there was a showdown there. The once the war was cast, it was cast. Right. And it's very obvious that being on the side of the Soviets was the wrong side. That's the case. And I think that if we'd have been on the side with the Free French, which they were, like Marshal Pétain was supportive of this, the French voted in their parliament. If we'd have been on the side of the French, and we should have been on the side of the English and all Europeans, and the war would have been quick, over, and communism would have been ended, and Russia would have been freed, Eastern Europe would have been freed, and
And if Uncle had been left to his devices, he wouldn't have bastardized France like we see it bastardized today.
Well, exactly, he didn't.
He just needed La Rochelle for his subs. He knew that. We know that, right? You know, we're smart men, right? We know it was strategic.
Well, we understand all that, I think, and we have to understand again that Germany didn't want war. I mean, David Irving shows it perfectly. AJP Taylor shows it perfectly. He turned to his other people and said, they declared war on us. They're trying to do a world war for Europe again after we suffered 37 million dead in the First World War. Are these people crazy? So we don't want to control Poland. We're willing. We're very more than happy. We just want our borders from 1914 and let Germans who were already voted by plebiscite to be united with their own country. We're not trying to take Poland. We're not trying to rule Poland. We need to avoid a war, but we don't need a world war. And the people that continued on this war and ignoring the German pleas for peace and negotiations, that whole war could have been avoided. And I think if that war would have been avoided, there would have been something the Jews wouldn't want and the communists wouldn't want. I think if things would have proceeded, Germany was doing better than any other country economically, just kind of like Russia is doing better now than Europe, than Western Europe is. Germany was doing better. And Germany had the greatest opportunities for working people. They had the best standard of living, the best medical care. They had the most environmental protection. They had clean rivers and they had clean atmosphere. You know, they had a good climate for the family and for everything healthy and good in life. And there's no question in my mind that the rest of the world, the rest of Europe would have wanted that. The French were already on board. Even though they lost the war, they were on board with this idea. And I think that without the war, there wouldn't have needed to be a war. I think that most of the world was to adopt it. It's the same kind of thing I always hear when I hear the left. They talk about fascism and all the fascist enemy and versus fascist. Fascism is not the way they portray fascism. They keep saying it's the corporate, you know, state. Well, the corporate state is not what the fascists meant by the corporate state. It meant the state, all right, allowed private property, but the corporate state or corporations that existed in the state or businesses, they still had to follow basic human rights.
They weren't allowed to be these anti-white Bolshevik
of course
entities, which is what we have now, right?
Exactly. In other words, All the fascists were was that you're going to have a strong state. They wanted a good medical system to care for people properly. They wanted everything to be good and right and opportunity and good education and all that for everybody. But at the same time, they were determined that the country would be led in the interest of its people, of its population, of its heritage, its culture, its values. That's all. With healthy families, they believed in family. They believed in free speech in many ways. And believe it or not, they really did. Lloyd George wrote an article about Germany under Hitler. And he said, don't you believe the fact that they don't have free speech? You've heard, he said, I've read criticism in German newspapers of different aspects of the government. I mean, believe it or not, he says there is freedom of speech there. You know, they definitely are hard on the communists and they definitely don't want to see a communist revolution. But they definitely believe in discussion and debate on certain matters. And they have good debates even in the parliament. But again, we don't get any impression of any of that stuff except by what we get in the media. And again, I must say, I'm not going to go into all the details at this moment. We don't have time for all that. there's a lot of aspects of National Socialism I would certainly disagree with in terms of my traditions and my heritage and my values as a Westerner and an American. I wouldn't say that I'm 100% behind everything that they proposed or did or every action that they ever took in their government or their society. But I can tell you one thing. It was 1,000 times better than what this government is. This government we have in America and in Europe is destroying the European people and the American people. That's a fact. And bringing us toward tyranny of the mind, tyranny of the spirit, destruction of the family, destruction of our children, destruction of our people, destruction really of peace in the world. These people are genociders. Like Christ says, ye and ye fathers are the sons of the devil, lest ye will do is a murderer from the beginning. And these people are the worst mass murderers in all of human history. That was my short story.
Hey, Dave, you're breaking up a little bit.
Yeah.
Me? I'm breaking up?
Yeah, you were breaking up.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happens, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Goose. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And Dave, Gahari, if we could get, like, eventually, I know it's kind of like, you know, not super high-tech platform, but maybe some super chats down the road, you know, that would be good.
Yeah. We are hearing no more fire alarms. And the reason was because the city power in our house
just heard one.
Was blinking.
Dave, it's still beeping.
I want to send Dr. Duke a 9-volt. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Dave,
guys.
It's still, thanks, Goose.
No, but I was
David,
really
it's still beeping.
But I was still having beeps of a different kind because what happened, I'm just telling you, I just had the service come up.
I believe you.
They got a new wire sent to my house because
I believe you, man.
The
Something's
way the service
though.
Was, it was the blinkering on and off. They even got a new wire before, I guess they got to dig a new ditch to get the wire to the house. But they got a new wire, and I've been hearing nothing, and I don't have the interruptions I did on my computer and stuff. So that's what made me think that we lost a little connection. It's because we've been having little brownouts because the wiring was not correct to the house. So that's part of it. And there may be, you know, a fire alarm somewhere in the house. But I'm
yeah, there is. It's still beeping. When I come over there, I'll find it.
At least 3 minutes, I haven't heard one.
No, it just happened, and I'm getting notifications of it.
Well, I'm listening.
It's okay. It's all right. Okay. Well,
if you hear one, say, I just heard an alarm, so I can hear it.
All right. So I'll tell you, and everybody else will as soon as they hear it.
Well, we still haven't heard one, though, in the last few
minutes. We have. Catherine, go ahead. You got the floor.
Well, not since last time.
Well, yes. I just don't think that David Duke answered my question. I mean, we know they have the Noahide laws. Now they're getting the Kristi Noem in South Dakota and whatever Ron DeSantis did. Like, they can fire you from your job, but, and then they, you know, they go after who they want to. I would just like to hear Duke or anybody else who has something to say about, I mean, we know it's going in a bad direction, and hopefully people will see it in time. So I just want to know what people smarter than me have to say.
Is that kind of the same question you asked before?
Yeah, I don't think he really answered it.
Well, okay, phrase it again real quickly, and I'll try to answer it exactly.
Yeah, go ahead. Rephrase the question.
Like, how far do you think they're going to go? I got the question.
I got it.
Basically, their numbers are a lot more than they say they are.
Okay.
But how far?
Let me answer the question. How far are they going to go? Hey, look, this is the way it is. This is an existential crisis. The Jews, if they are allowed to continue on this course, they will go to total tyranny, total destruction of the white race, an old enemy of theirs, destruction of any other race they feel is a challenge to them. They will genocide them. They will create robotics. They will enslave humanity. They will have no freedom of speech, and there'll be no free mind. There'll be no free elections. There'll be no rights, and there will be total tyranny. We'll have a state that will be a dystopian state with the amount of torture and horror and suffering worse than the world's ever seen. That's where we're really heading. It's the greatest single crisis in the entirety of human history. That's how far they will go. Okay?
Yeah.
That's it.
I muted her because she was, I don't know, shuffling or something.
Well, anyway, we got it.
Yeah.
How's that for an answer? I think I don't know what else I can
say. That was short and sweet and perfect. Okay, Jimmy, you got the floor, buddy.
Hey, guys. I'd like to say, what do you think it could be something like on the same issue, like HT had to go through where he was charged and then they just dropped charges? It's something that needs to be hit in the Supreme Court or something like that to challenge these kind of things with free speech?
Well, here's the fact, the truth about it. I'd like to say that we're going to solve this something in the courts. We're not.
Right.
It just beeped.
We have a judiciary. I want to sink. I just want that to sink into everybody's mind. We got a judiciary. I had a good lawyer, friends of mine, who defended me, by the way, one of the best lawyers in the country. And so I was talking to him about something. You know, somebody was talking about how the 14th Amendment, like what they were trying to get Trump disqualified from running on, about insurrection and so forth. That amendment was never legally ratified. Good chance of having that overturned, the Supreme Court. It's not going to be overturned, that amendment, even though it was never legally ratified. There's nothing in the Constitution that provides where you can the government of the country can let your state vote or not vote by how you want to vote on an issue. Either you have states' rights or you don't. Either states have the right to approve an amendment or they don't. You don't have the right to make even your participation in the government or the Congress dependent upon how you vote for some amendment to the Constitution. This is these are illegally adopted amendments, no matter what you think about them or how right or wrong you think these amendments are. We also have laws on the books that say any country that has supported the development of nuclear weapons outside of legitimate treaties, like the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty or who doesn't follow inspections. Any country that does that cannot receive a single penny of American military or American money or any sort of largesse, whatever, from the United States. But this is violated every day in terms of Israel. How many times has the Biden administration done that just recently? I mean, it's unbelievable to think about the violations of our Constitution. So, no, we have to have a revolution. We have to take over the government completely, and it'll be time for us to change some of the laws. We have to have so much strength and so much power politically that we can line up the states the way we need, get constitutional amendments passed that'll once and for all protect the existence, survival, and freedoms of our people and remove the Jewish traitors and the Jewish enemies who are literally trying to wipe out the seed, the genes, the heritage of the people who created America and created Western Christian civilization. This is the greatest crime in the history of the world, and it's going on right now. White people across the world are losing one quarter of their population every single generation. This has never happened before in human history to any people. This is the greatest crime in the history of the world. And this is what we're facing here, folks. We need a revolution and we need freedom. I say that we can do that legally, but the only way we can do it legally is by a movement that tells the whole truth, because if we don't deal with the facts of Jewish supremacy, we don't do our deal with the reality of the tyranny that we're under. As long as they're able to control the Wikipedia, the encyclopedia of the world, and everything they lie about everything. As long as they control the search engines of the world, while you understanding that they're doing this, infecting your mind psychologically and silently, and without even your knowledge of doing it, they can affect millions of votes the way they want. They can actually run media that even uses entertainment in a way to program people. This is not, we don't have a democracy. We don't have freedom. And we have a government that is dedicated to our genocide. And that's exactly what it is, folks. It's the destruction of our genes. The same, it's not the same as putting people against the wall and shooting them. But if you put people against the wall and you say, okay, we're going to make sure you don't have babies, or we're going to make sure that it's untenable for your financial survival or your well-being or your mood even to have children, and we're going to make sure you die out while we bring in non-people who aren't like you to control the votes and control the country and rule over you and make a tyranny for your descendants that are left. This is what's really going on, folks, and this is a flat-out truth that we have to face up to. It's not going to be solved by some...
Hey, sounds good, Dave.
Okay, thanks, Jimmy. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Okay.
All right. Okay, Michael, go ahead, buddy. You got the floor.
Hey, David Duke and David Gahari. Welcome. How are you?
Right, I'm doing great, sir. How are you doing? I hope you're enjoying the show.
I am. Non-compliance is a good way to start with just not obeying these unjust edicts. I'll call them edicts, whatever.
You know? I agree.
If people didn't wear a mask and they didn't test and they didn't vax, that would have been a good thing. But people complied because they were stupefied by the media, the overwhelming media. And unfortunately, a lot of the damage has been done with this Jew poison, this vaccine that they put on our race. I don't even know if I'm going to even see grandkids now.
It does affect fertility. There's no doubt about it. It's been proven. In fact, the CDC, they just had a big thing that was exposing the fact that the CDC was lying, saying that the infertility rate and the mortality rate was lower than it really is. That
for whites. Really, for whites. Yeah,
it was three times bigger. Let me say one more thing. Right. It's very important about one thing that you suggested, which I agree with you about noncompliance. I do want to put a caveat there. I want us to be smart. I want us to understand the methods that Jews use to destroy resistance to them. And there have been these people out there, and there have been these Jews out there. And I know specifically they've got a lot of Jews running around the country right now telling people, our people, that you don't have to pay your taxes. You can just stop paying your taxes, and that's okay. They can't put you in jail. And what they're doing is they're really getting people, and they are being put in jail, and they're getting people who are the most able to help our race and dedicate their life to our race and support the movement to free our people. You break the law and you don't pay your taxes. And don't pay more taxes than you should pay, that's for sure. But let me tell you something, folks.
If you own any property or anything,
they'll come take it from you.
Yeah, they will. Absolutely.
And that's kind of stupid, isn't it? For our people, the Jews are not going to do that. I mean, they get out of it anyway. They just cheat. But the point is that no. That they're not going to. It's insane for the people who support our causes not to pay their taxes and make a big deal of it, or whatever, or do something. And if you don't want to pay taxes, you can still move to another country.
If you're willing to live like a pauper and just be a renter or somebody that doesn't own.
But there are ways you can do it too in terms of legally. I mean, you can. If you're working for, it's hard to do that when you're working for a wage, a taxable wage. But if you have a business, you can deduct a lot of deductions legally. I'm not talking about breaking the law.
Yeah.
And you can also even deduct, you can create and you can make 501c three organizations, and you can donate to them, and you can do all sorts of things that you can lower your tax bill. So there's smart
question,
ways.
David, yeah. Did you, as soon as COVID hit and Trump shut the economy down in 2020, did you know immediately this was a Jewish operation?
Absolutely. I knew within 3 weeks. When it first came out, I said, well, what is this? You know, this sounds pretty bad. So I started digging into it. I was already suspicious about the establishment anyway. And within 3 weeks, Dr. Slattery and I, on our daily show, 5 days a week, we were talking about, from the very beginning, said the lockdowns are not necessary. We said that, you know, these vaccines that they're talking about are bull. They'd be experimental vaccines. They'd be the most dangerous vaccines ever. That there's no reason for the masking. And we all, both Dr. Slattery and I, we've got it all on tape from those years back. And we've got it on tape that we said that the way you stop this virus is by human immunity.
And you said it was Jewish, though. You said this is
Jewish. Oh, yeah,
Jewish.
We said it was Jewish from the beginning. We talked about the CDC, who ran it. We talked about the whole process and the key leaders of all the big pharma that were doing the vaccines. You know, and we also looked at the history of masks, and we knew that masks were not effective for any viruses. There's no difference in masks or not masks, but masks have a lot of damage to kids, and masks have a lot of – the countries that didn't hardly use masks, the countries that did not have lockdown, the countries that did not have much vaccine deployment did the best. They had the lowest death rates. The biggest death rates were in the most modern, high – level medically expensed countries of the world. The countries that didn't lock down, the people fared much better. And by the way, the viruses killed much fewer people on average. And we can prove that. We can look at Niger, an African country, which has a very primitive system, but they only had 9% of the people vaccinated. And, you know, and they congregated. None of the businesses were shut down or whatever. They had a spike, and then they didn't have very small spikes. Australia, which has the same population as Niger, they had, with all the vastly documented vaccines, they had incredible spikes, incredible death rates, right? Destruction of their economy and deaths. From all sorts.
How was your government down there in Louisiana? Were they lax or were they repressive down there?
Well, they were a lot laxer than most places, but it still wasn't perfect for sure.
You know? Yeah. All right. Thank you, Dr. Duke. You have a good weekend.
I didn't get any vax. That's
for Thanks, you. Michael. All right, buddy. All right. We've got Lancastrian Jack from the mother country.
I love the way you say that, Dave.
Thank you, Jack. And I watched that clip again. Actually, I did a show on Friday, a long show, and I sent that clip to the host. Yeah, of course, they had not heard of it. No. He had not heard of it.
Which show was that? I'll check it.
That was NNR, Night Nation Review.
Lovely.
It's on Speak Free Radio. Yeah. Anyway, it's a long form type show.
Yeah, but I
just watched that clip again. What a wonderful. You know, what a wonderful clip. Go ahead, Jack.
I'm glad you like it. I have a question for Dr. Duke.
Yes, sir.
Personal question, if I may. But let me just say, before I say that, what a great show this is. Every week we get to listen not just to your wisdom, Dr. Duke, but to that of Dave Gahari and the callers. I was just listening to Goose before. What an interesting man the Goose is. What a man of great conviction. But we're so lucky to listen to this show. It's the best show on radio. It must be.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I know Dave thanks you as well, because without Dave, we couldn't do this show.
No,
and
of course.
It was his idea. I got to give him the credit for it.
You know? No, there's a great chemistry, a tremendous dynamic between you and Dave. It's we can sense the fondness between you.
Yeah, we're brothers. We are truly brothers. We're like brothers of different mothers.
It's lovely. It's a great mutual respect. But the question I have for you, Dr. Duke, is you seem to me like a very humble man, much humbler than I'd be in that situation. But how difficult is it for you, Dr. Duke, to resist a feeling of hubris? I mean, not to have your head turned by, you know, the acclaim and the plaudits. Is that a challenge for you, Dr. Duke?
It never really has been for me, because for me, it's just always been a labor of love. You know, I didn't do this for fame or fortune, though I must say that, like any kid of my generation, my father was a full colonel. You know, I admired our military history. I admired people who were courageous. And when I was a kid, I watched, you know, like the war movies and the great stories, like, say, the Greeks at Thermopylae and different historical things, when we still had some degree of sanity in films. Yeah. And I wanted to be a hero. I mean, I wanted to be a person who was respected and who was doing his part. Once I realized, and I realized at a very young age, by the time I was 12 years old, that we were in a battle for our survival. And I wanted, like every kid, they watch a movie, they dream about being a great athlete, or they dream about being, you know, courageous in a war. When we were kids, we used to always play war when we were, you know, in grade school. And we were the cowboys and Indians, or we were, you know, Germans and Americans, and sometimes you fought on both sides, or Northerners and Southerners. And we all wanted to be a hero. We always wanted to be a man who was really brave. We'd sometimes talk together as young kids, and we'd say, and we'd talk about what happened, for instance, during the Korean War, which was a lot of the history at the time. And they talked about the tortures that people went through. And we'd all talk as young kids and kind of blow some steam and says, yeah, you know, that I know one thing. If they capture me, it would just be name, rank, and serial number, right? I don't know if that's true, because I know that under torture, almost any man could break, and no man could be, you know, not forgiven for breaking under what you can do with torture today. Yeah. But at the same time, it was just like, I wanted to be a scientist. I always wanted truth. I read Scientific American every month when it came out. Every month I read every page by the time I was 12 years old. I was reading Scientific American every month. I read Popular Mechanics every month. I read Guns and Ammo every month, I believe it was, the magazine. I read Popular Mechanics, Popular Science. Anyway, I read all this stuff. And I was becoming a little bit leftist in a way, because I read so much stuff like that. But when I finally got awakened on the race question and the Jewish question, it was like I knew what I had to do with my life.
Yeah.
And I realized it wasn't going to be easy, but I also knew that it would be a very interesting life. And I knew that it would be a very satisfying life to speak the truth and to help the truth to power. And sometimes I think that maybe I wasn't calculating enough in a sense that I put truth always at a premium, and maybe politically I would have gone to the Senate, maybe gone to the presidency, where I would have had maybe a chance to save the world more than I did as I did. But the reason, one of the reasons I didn't make it to the presidency was I just couldn't compromise on most important truthful facts, whether it be race or the Jewish question. And that cut off certain avenues.
It was great, Dr. Duke, forgive me, that you did eventually you told your story about your awakening, which touched so many people. Matt Collette's talked to this day about the impact your awakening and your account of your awakening had on him. But are you satisfied, Dr. Duke, that you've not lived in vain? You've got many years to go, of course.
I think the only way someone can live in vain is if they live not in the service of what they were made for the purpose of which they were made. And I believe that whether you call it God or destiny or just, I knew what I was destined to do. At first, I wanted to be a scientist. I wanted to be an astronaut like many young kids. I love science. I love the idea of going into space. You know, and back then it was kind of the dawn of the space age, 1950s and 60s. And that's what I really wanted to do. When I was 20, it was 1961. So, I mean, it's like, that's what I wanted. But once I realized the crisis that we were in, I thought there's nothing I could do better with my life than fight for our people.
But don't be saying.
And so I didn't, you know, it's not been in vain at all. And I know I've changed the lives of many, many people. I've improved the lives of many people. People have told me all over the world that just reading my book inspired them to do greater things in their own life.
That's right.
And so I'm I'm happy. I'm not. I wish that we had greater success, but yes. In terms of my own feelings, when I go to sleep at night, I feel thankful to God, thankful to my friends, thankful to life that I've lived this world, and I had a great life. I mean, I haven't been a wealthy man, but I'm just like a common middle class person, you know, very simple house, you know, but I've lived in very exciting places at cheap money. I lived on the side of a ski mountain for 10 years in Selensee, Austria, and I taught for a while, and I did my videos and did your stuff so I could go skiing for 30 minutes in the morning, every morning, and then go to my work and then go lecture. And that was great. I've worked with Alexander Solzhenitsyn in Russia. I mean, my God, those are experiences you can't make up. I went to Syria for a few months and learned about them. I studied in Kyiv, Ukraine, and getting my doctorate, and I was able to get a higher education. I've studied a lot about science. I actually cured my macular degeneration, and I could help anybody cure it because I figured out how to do it. It wasn't me, but I found doctors that knew how to do it.
We're closing. Jack, did you want to make a comment?
Just what to say, Dr. Duke. You know, they say, don't they, that the purpose of life is a life of purpose, and you, sir, have lived a life of purpose.
I have, and as long as I breathe, I will continue to do it. I'll never retire as long as I can still put my words together cogently, and I hope I've been as cogent and my memory is serving me properly as much as ever. And sometimes I feel like the last few months I've gotten even better in my cogency, and I've gotten even better in my memory. For one thing, I've had some health issues, and I've had to really bear down on keto diet and certain other aspects that I think I've had to really make myself a lot stronger facing a couple of health challenges. And
thank you, Jack. We'll see you next week, buddy.
I'm out here tomorrow morning, 10 a.m.
Go ahead. Tell them, Dave, quick. All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, everybody, for stopping by. Yes, Rents Radio, and have a great week. And we will see you.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.